This is Maureen Kafkas, the Brain BS Coach, here to tell you about the episode today. In this episode, which is the first in the Men Who Inspire Me series, I speak with Dante Bacani, who grew up in the house behind me on the north side of Youngstown, Ohio. We discuss how our paths crossed recently on Facebook and why I invited him to be on the podcast. We talk about how the pandemic sort of saved his life in a roundabout way and how resilience has impacted his recovery from a devastating stroke. The fact that Dante found strength and purpose in the face of so much adversity is why he is in the series of Men Who Inspire Me. So sit back, settle in, and listen and learn. Episode number 155 of the Brain BS Podcast, Consciously Recovering from a Stroke with Dante Bacani. Do you want more out of your life, but not exactly sure what that might be? Are you longing for something, but can't quite put your finger on what it is? That is the universe speaking to you, and it is time to listen up. I'm your host, Maureen Kafkas, the Brain BS Coach. I created the Brain BS Podcast to help people define what success means to them and show them how to get it. I help you to let go of fear and doubt and prepare your nervous system for success. I show you how to understand your own energy and to trust yourself to make all the decisions. If you are ready to go inward and stop looking outside yourself for all the answers, this is the podcast for you. Now let's get started. Hello and welcome back to the Brain BS Podcast. I have my guest here today, Dante Bacani, and it's kind of interesting the way I know Dante, and anybody from the north side of Youngstown listening to the episode is going to know him too. So I grew up on Selma Avenue and his family grew up behind us on Fifth Avenue, and I never really knew him when we were younger. And then a few years ago, I saw on a news feed that he had suffered a pretty significant stroke. And he was doing these posts and videos during his recovery that I thought were pretty amazing that he was getting on social media and doing that. So I started following him. And then I recently, when I decided to do the Men Who Inspire Me series, decided to reach out and see if he would be willing to be on the podcast. And he was. So he is here today, and I'm going to let him introduce himself and let you know what he wants you to know about him.
Thanks, Maureen. As you said, I suffered a fairly major stroke in May of 2021. So the ironic thing is, was 2 days after my birthday that I'd gone into the hospital for a sort of minor stroke. It wasn't the one that actually caused all the weakness on my left side. That happened while I was in the hospital. But it's sort of like my life went on a pause in May of 2021. So in a lot of ways, I still feel I'm the same age that I was when I went into the hospital. So, you know, whenever I finally get back into the real world, I plan just to pick up from that age. In the last 2 years and some months, I should not have to add those to my life age-wise. I'm still recovering from the stroke. I've made a lot of progress in the 2 years and month or two since it happened. But it's a process. It'll be going on for some time.
Right. So, okay. So what I think what you're telling me is that you had a minor stroke.
It's funny the way I ended up in the hospital in the first place. And I hopefully won't give you or overwhelm you with too much backstory. But going back to the beginning of the pandemic, I put the word out to a bunch of friends that I thought it would be interesting while we were all shut in because of the pandemic. And this is spring of 2020, to do the book The Artist's Way together. I don't know if you know that one, but it's basically a 12-week creativity recovery program. And so there were a dozen of us who got together, and once a week we would meet on Zoom, like you and I are, to go through the exercises of the book. And it ended up being a very therapeutic thing for the 12 of us, you know, to always have this structure in our lives. And we really bonded over this experience. So even after the 12 weeks of the Artist's Way concluded, we ended up still meeting every week online, just as a sort of mental health break to keep in touch with each other. So fast forward to May of 2021, and I'd been experiencing a few symptoms that I was sort of explaining away to myself as being, well, these are probably side effects of the COVID vaccinations, because some of the things I was feeling were consistent with some of the symptoms that I heard were being attributed to the vac excuse me, to the vaccine. So, I'm sure there was this element of me trying to find the simplest solution as opposed to being, a mature, responsible adult and just going to the hospital, and
Oh,
seeing.
I'm gonna stop you there because I think that's actually after working in a hospital for a couple of decades, the average person explains away their symptoms because their brain literally just can't take it in
Oh, yeah, I'm
that
sure that
something of that
happens all the
magnitude is
time.
happening. So I wouldn't be too hard on yourself about that.
Well, I understand that's probably a very natural tendency. But what happened was right around my birthday of 2021, my girlfriend of the time noticed that I was slurring my words a little bit. I was having a few balance issues, feeling dizzy. So basically, she and some of these people from the Artist's Way Zoom group that we had basically staged an intervention and forced me into a car and took me to the hospital, to get a examination. So they found my blood pressure was through the roof. They did a MRI or a CAT scan, I think actually both. They discovered that there are a number of arteries that take blood to the brain, but two of them, for me, one was completely blocked and the other was like 90, 91% blocked or something like that. So pretty bad. And if both were blocked, you die, is what it comes down to. So they basically said, we're going to keep you here. We're going to insert a stent into the artery that still has some blood flow, and then you're going to be on blood thinners or whatever for the rest of your life. Well, what happened was I had the procedure for the stent about 4 days after my friends took me to the emergency room, and it was basically the night following the stent insertion that apparently a little piece of plaque from my arteries broke loose and caused the major stroke, the one that really did all the damage. So basically ever since then I've been in stroke recovery. And I, when I went into the emergency room, there really was in many, many ways kind of the conclusion of one big chapter or one big half of my life, one act of it, whatever you want to call it. Because a few months later, when I was still at a skilled nursing facility, my house got packed up. All my stuff is still in storage somewhere in California. I don't know where. My dog had gone to live with the woman I was dating at the time. He ended up passing away about a year later. He was old, so that wasn't a big surprise. But there are so many ways that my life will be different, once I get back out into the real world, quote unquote, than it
Okay,
was
let's
the
stop
day I
there
went
because
in.
I have a couple questions for you before
Sure,
we
go
move
ahead.
on. So I'm wondering, because I know when a lot of people first hear that they had a minor stroke or they have to get surgery, I'm wondering, like, when you went into that, what your mindset was and when you woke up from the surgery. Do you have any recollection of that or no?
Well, I do. I mean, it's going into the surgery or the days leading up to the surgery. I remember the friend who drove me to the hospital was sitting there with me when they got the initial results of the CAT scan, the MRI, and they were telling me, well, we need to put this stent in, so it's going to be a few days until we can do that. And, you know, he was saying that I took it very calmly, whereas, you know, he blows a gasket if his car needs new tires. So, I mean, there's that aspect of, I don't know if it's because my father is a doctor, you know, so I'm comfortable with medical thoughts or whatever, but going into the procedure, I really wasn't all that concerned. I mean, I felt I was in good hands. I was told by many people that the surgeon who was doing the procedure was this amazingly brilliant guy, and he is. I've stayed in touch with him. So, you know, going in, I wasn't thrilled about the idea that my health had gotten to the point that I needed that kind of intervention. But, you know, I was at peace with the idea of the surgery. So what I guess my memories following the surgery are a little bit choppy, because I do remember coming out of the anesthesia during the right after the procedure. And I remember overhearing someone say, well, we have the stent in you, you're gonna have much better blood flow in that artery. And you know, they moved me to post-op. And I remember overnight in post-op, I started having symptoms that something was going wrong. My body was starting to do these weird sort of contortions. Hard to describe. I mean, you know, I sort of remember the physical sensation of knowing that something was going wrong internally. And I remember, you know, the sort of hustle and bustle of the emergency room, intensive care people scrambling to try and get me stabilized. But one of the distinct memories I have for, I'm not even sure when this happened, but that same morning, I was having quite a bit of difficulty breathing. You know, I sounded like Darth Vader, basically. So they put me on a ventilator. And then sometime after that, maybe, I'm not even sure if it was the same day, might have been the next day, but I overheard someone say that there was this initial diagnosis of me coming down with what they call locked-in syndrome, which I don't know if you know what that is, but it's about as bad as you can get after a stroke and not die. I mean, basically, what it means is that you lose the ability to do anything except blink your eyes. You know, they and for most cases, when you have locked-in syndrome, that's it. I mean, I know anecdotally about someone who did recover from it, but she may be a unicorn, you know. So the initial diagnosis was pretty bleak, but fortunately, they were wrong. I mean,
well, before you go on, I just want to talk, because for people listening about strokes, there's all kinds of different symptoms that you can get and different kinds of strokes that impact people differently. But Dante was fortunate enough that cognitively you remained intact.
Yeah, as far as I know. I mean, I did have this funny thought when I was in the hospital, because they would come in every day and do these little tests to see if my memory was intact, like, you know, asking me who the president is, what day of the week it is, that kind of stuff. And it got to the point where I basically had memorized the memory tests. So I'm like, well, how is that testing me when I'm just repeating back the answers that I know for questions I know you're going to ask me? The other thing I thought was, you know, if I lost my memory, How do you know? You know, I mean, I lost it. It's not like I'll be sitting there saying, I remember living on Fifth Avenue, but now I can't remember it. You know, it's just gone if it's a memory that you lost. But yeah,
Well,
I mean,
as an occupational therapist whose responsibility it was to assess cognition, and what they were doing was to see if you were alert and oriented to where you were in the time and place. It's
That's
not
right.
really so that you know whether you lost your memory. It's so the staff knows. So if you can't answer the fact that you would think those questions, and if you said it, illustrates that your cognition is intact. Because if it wasn't, you wouldn't realize they were being asked, they weren't asking that question over and over again. But okay, so let's go a little bit into your you go through all this. I can't imagine that it all sunk in right away, that it's been a process to actually, like, you suffered a lot of losses and a lot of control, a lot of freedom. Your life took a path that you were not expecting at all. So tell us a little bit about what it was like for you to adjust to all that. And then, like, maybe how and when Buddhism came into the picture to help.
So, I mean, the mindset I've had throughout this recovery of mine probably dates back to the very earliest moments after I overheard this locked-in syndrome diagnosis. And, you know, for the record, as you're probably aware, when, you know, when that kind of news is something that they're aware of, they probably should not be speaking about it in the same room as someone that they don't know whether or not that person can hear you. I mean, at the time I was on a ventilator, I really couldn't open my eyes because my eyeballs were basically so out of whack that the visual information, the input was so confusing. I just shut my eyes because I couldn't make sense what I was seeing. So, you know, these people, whoever they were in the room, probably should have gone into the hallway, you know, to
Oh,
have
that's
these
a really good
conversations.
Point, Dante. That's a really good thing to bring up in the podcast, especially for anyone who's in healthcare listening to it, or family members who are there to support you. They probably thought because you were on the ventilator, had this big stroke and your eyes were closed, that you, because we often would be in a room and people would be like, do you think they can hear us? Do you think? And I always assumed that they could, but not everybody does. So that's a really important point, because that had to have impacted you in a pretty significant way.
Well, here's the way it impacted me. I don't know how I was aware that locked-in syndrome was a pretty bad thing or what it meant exactly. But I remember thinking, I mean, this is about as dark as things got for me at any point during this recovery. So I'm laying there thinking, you know, well, if I have this locked-in syndrome, I'm not sure I want to go on living, you know, with, you know, what kind of life would that be when all you can do is blink your eyes, you know? So, I mean, to the extent that I had any kind of suicidal thoughts, that's maybe the moment they were happening. And then it occurred to me right away, well, you know, if I wanted to kill myself, what am I going to do? Blink myself to death? You know, I mean, so, you know, that's what I'm stuck with. I better make the most of, you know, what I got. And I mean, I kind of made the decision at that point, you know, that I was going to recover, whatever that looks like. And furthermore, there were periods during that time when I was on the ventilator, when, because I could not speak with this tube, you know, shoved down my throat, it was very frustrating trying to communicate with anyone. I mean, what I ended up figuring out was that if I traced letters in the air or traced them on a pillow, I could spell out words and communicate with people that way. And, you know, that was a If I have to say, a fairly inspired idea by me, but given my state. But at that time, I also made the sort of mental commitment that if I ever got my voice back, I would, use it in service of people who don't have voices, because, I started to realize what people who are disabled or are minorities, the frustration they must feel in not being able to be heard, and if I've got one thing going for me, it's that I'm a pretty comfortable person when it comes to public speaking, to articulating my thoughts or talking on behalf of someone else. So I knew from those very early moments that I wanted to recover, and that in some way, shape, or form, my future would encompass this advocacy work, speaking on behalf of others, whether it's the disabled or any other group that I feel needs to be heard, who aren't being heard for whatever reason. So the Recovery Foundation was sort of set very early on. And, to skip ahead to what you just asked about with the Buddhism thing, I will say that I'm very much at the beginning of this thing with Buddhism. So I am no expert by any stretch of the imagination, but Buddhism is a spiritual practice. It's been something I've been interested in for probably two or three decades. I mean, going back to my late 20s, when I would just start reading things that I found to be very interesting about Buddhism. And one of the big aspects of my recovery is the knowledge that a practice of mindfulness, of meditation, can do wonders for your recovery from stroke or many other physical issues, medical issues. So I think the idea of mindfulness, meditation, dovetail so well with the practices of Buddhism that it seems to be a very good fit for my own spiritual beliefs, my own physical characteristics, and what I need to make the most of my life going forward.
Yeah. So, I didn't ask you this at the beginning, but I'm kind of curious, because of the way you're approaching this whole thing, and that you found a purpose when you were like in the midst of it, and you already knew what you were going to do. What did you do for a living before you had your stroke?
Sure. Well, I moved from Chicago to LA in 2016 to pursue my interests in being a filmmaker or a television maker, TV producer. I wanted to start as a screenwriter and then work my way up the ladder from there. So writing has, for a long time, whether it's writing or editing or proofreading, that kind of stuff, has been part of my educational background as well as my professional background. Ever since I got out of college, I was working here in LA as a marketing and communications consultant at the time of the stroke. So, my future will probably still have many, many clients, that I was doing work for. I do hope to return to doing the kind of marketing or communications consulting work that I was doing with them. What I did was a nice, it basically drew upon things that I've done throughout my professional career, whether it was web design, web consulting, writing, graphic design, that kind of thing. So, I was doing stuff in the years leading up to the stroke that sort of drew on all of my educational and professional experiences leading up to that point. And, you know, unfortunately, during the 2 years of the stroke recovery, I've not been doing too much creative writing. I have been working on a memoir about the first year of my stroke recovery, but that's about the only writing I've been doing. But I do look forward to getting back to either completing or revising some of the screenwriting work that I was doing prior to the stroke.
Well, so I think it's kind of funny because you're like, unfortunately, I wasn't doing creative writing. I was just doing my memoir of my first year of recovery with the stroke, which is huge and way more important than anything creative. And what if that's going to be your, like, a documentary film that you actually make and you can inspire a lot of other people who have had strokes with that?
Well, funny you should mention that, Maureen, because there's actually a documentary being filmed right now about my recovery. I don't know if you knew that. So within the first year of my recovery, through a mutual friend, I met people at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, which is at the forefront of stroke recovery research and has been for decades. And so the people at UAB, when they spoke with me, they said, well, it's clear you've suffered no cognitive impairment, plus you're very resilient, which is the first time I'd ever heard that word used within the context of stroke recovery. But they said, we want to do this documentary about the importance of resilience in recovery, and we think you'd be the perfect subject to do this thing with. So they've sent up a film crew to film with me here in LA. We've done a bunch of stuff on Zoom. They're gonna come back up later this summer to film some more with me. So I don't know when this documentary will finally be edited together. And I don't know if it's gonna just appear on the web or if they're gonna try to enter it into some festivals or something. But yeah, apparently there is going to be a documentary about me and my stroke recovery.
Wow. So that's interesting because I didn't even plan this, but it's the perfect segue because we talked about this on our call. And because I worked in healthcare for so long and you've experienced such a massive trauma, about the expectations in healthcare around how long you can continue to recover. And before we get into that, I'm noticing with other people that I'm talking to who have gone through trauma and who are in my series that inspire me, they're people who don't give up. They don't subscribe to the timeframes that other people create for them. And they just listen to their intuition and they keep going. And I just think in general, including myself, we can give up on things a little bit sooner. And then who knows what the possibilities are, because look at how you continue to recover. So why don't you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, within the stroke recovery community, for lack of a better word, or within the field of stroke recovery, there used to be a mindset that
That's okay. That's all right. A little background noise in the facility. That's all right.
Don't mean vacuuming, folks. I promise you. So, so anyway, there's this mindset within the field from years ago that people recovering from stroke, to the extent they can recover any functions that they lost or whatever, that you really only have 6 months following the stroke to achieve any appreciable recovery. And what the science and research over the last decade or two has shown is that the brain is a remarkable organ, you know, physical thing, as far as its ability to rewire and to heal given time and given the right cues or exercises or environment or whatever. So so this idea that you only have 6 months to get your functions back is outdated, and yet there's still so many people working in the field who still believe this, that I think it frankly can do a lot of damage. Because if you're speaking with someone who's maybe not as resilient or as stubborn, frankly, as I am, you know, they may just buy into it, and it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, because they think, oh, I can't really walk. It's been 6 months and a day. I'm never going to be able to walk again. And
yeah, well, I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop you for a second to bring it to the Brain BS podcast, because I did this in the last episode too. Our thoughts create our feelings, and those lead to actions, and that's how we get our results. So if our thoughts are that the medical community knows better than I do, and they're telling me this, then you're probably going to be resigned, and you're not going to keep moving forward and doing all the therapy and the continual exercise and work that you've done. And because you didn't think that way, your thought was, I intend to fully recover as much as possible. It totally changes the outcome. So you're right. It does a lot of damage when people don't believe in the possibility of something.
Yeah, and I have to say for myself, in the nursing home that I lived in for 15 months before I moved to the place I'm at now, there was a director of therapy at that place who basically told me very early on, and this is probably less than 6 months after my stroke, but he told me, in effect, he said, you know, what we see is that people who have the kind of stroke you had don't really recover much after the 6 month mark. And he was basically telling me, look, as bad as you are right now, you're going to be stuck with it. So you might as well get used to it. And, you know, I didn't like this guy anyway. So when he told me this, my internal reaction was, well, screw you. I'm going to walk, I'm going to recover, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to shove your words back down your throat, you know. And, you know, I mean, I will say in his defense, to the extent that there is one, this is a guy who mainly worked with geriatrics, you know, people in their 70s, 80s, you know, people towards the end of life. And I'm very much in the middle of my life. So I, you know, I always had this kind of internal compass that I knew if I put the work in, I'd get better. And I've spoken with people, say, whose parents may have had a stroke, or a mother, sibling, whatever, and they've had recoveries that maybe took 10 or 20 years, but they recovered remarkably. So, you know, this idea of it being capped in 6 months is old information that really I don't think serves the idea of recovery, because if I've learned anything, you know, this recovery is taking a lot longer than I would have liked, but it's still progressing forward. And I have a strong feeling, as long as I continue to put in the work and commit to it, you know, I'll get good results however long it takes.
Yeah. So, and then another problem with that expectation and that being in the medical community is then that's how our system set up for payments and insurance. Yeah. So then people are denied further insurance because they no longer. And now, before I say this though, because I did work as a therapist for years, there are some people that are not going to recover from things. Like a complete spinal cord injury, maybe today, but back then with the technology and stuff, it wouldn't. So there is a fine line between planning for the worst, but you can always hope for the best. Like it doesn't have to be an all or nothing scenario. And typically when people are leaving the hospital setting to go into rehab or wherever they are, you have to stay in that moment and you have to plan. So say someone has a massive event and they're in the hospital and they desperately want to go home. Well, you can't, you know, some you just can't if you don't have a system set up or support. So then you tell the person, okay, well, we're gonna go to a facility and we're gonna get you what you need to be able to operate at the level that you're at now, but we're gonna continue to do therapy and hope that you improve to the point where you can take care of yourself. That is the way I addressed it when I was working, because you don't want to remove hope, but you also want to be realistic about safety in the home setting at the level that you're at. But the problem with stopping the therapy, and not a lot of people don't have the money to continue. They don't have the resilience like you. They don't have the initiative or the wherewithal to find out how to do it. And that's like really a big shame considering how much you've recovered after the 6 months.
Yeah, I will say this is actually a new story that only was told to me since the last time we spoke. So it's kind of new. But I was working with my PT last week, and she had an intern and a student observing our session, and she told them, you know, I'm going to take a minute to brag on Dante's behalf here, because when he came to us last year and he said what his goals were, and at the time I was still living at the nursing home, and I said to her at the time last year that my goals were to live on my own, or at least move to an assisted living, you know, to be able to bathe on my own, you know, and be as self-sufficient as possible. And her thinking at the time, which would have been probably summer of 2022, was that, well, this guy can probably achieve those things, but his timeline for doing this is not reasonable. It's going to take a lot longer than what he's saying it's going to take. And then fast forward to last week, when she's talking to these students, she says, you know, not only has he achieved all those milestones he set out last year, but, you know, we have to kind of scramble to revise our treatment plan for him because he's getting ahead of us, you know. And in 18 years of doing this therapy stuff, I've never seen someone progress the way he's done it, you know, and it's a testimony to Dante's, you know, initiative, resilience. I forget exactly how she put it, but it basically came down to me having a fairly clear idea of the goals that I wanted to achieve. And, you know, basically not hearing or not accepting the word, no, you can't do that. You know, yeah. I really felt that, yeah, I mean, who knows if she had told me a year ago that, hey, Dante, we can do what you want to do, but it's going to take 3 years, not 9 months, you know, or whatever. That may have had a bit of, may have put the brakes on a little bit. So I'm glad she didn't say, you're being unreasonable when I sent this stuff last year. And, you know, having heard what she told these students last week, now I really believe, you know, I can accomplish whatever I want to recovery-wise. It's gonna take time, but if I put in the effort and if I work with good people, I'll get there. And, you know, the thing is, 20 years ago, the kind of stroke I had would probably have been, I mean, not a death sentence, but, you know, you would not have expected a great result. But, you know, we live in a time with wonderful technological breakthroughs, so I really feel like there's no way to know what things are going to look like 2 years down the road or 5 years. And if I stay alive that long, you know, there could be some major breakthrough that even gets me closer to a full recovery. So there is this idea in my head that if I'm going to have a stroke the way I had it, at least I had it at a good time in human history, because 20 years ago or further would have been a lot worse of an outcome.
Yeah, so the timing, and just like the whole principles of universal law are at play here. I don't know how much you are aware of universal law, but the whole idea that you are looking at things as the possibilities are limitless for your recovery creates a very high vibration in you that wouldn't be there if you thought this is as good as it gets. So the law of attraction. So the law of attraction is that you attract to you what you put out there. The law of cause and effect is when you take action. You're not just thinking about what you want and envisioning it and making goals, because you could do that all day long. But if you don't put in the, you know, put forth the effort and take the action, then you're not going to get the effect that you want. So it's just remarkable. Do you, so I know you're spiritual and into Buddhism, and but do you see like the divine timing and the miracles in all this that you are functioning as well as you are at this point?
Well, I mean, if I sit back and think about it, oh, sorry, here's one of those interruptions.
That's okay. No. Go ahead.
Yeah, so if I stop and pause and think about it, I may think about it in the terms you're describing with this universal law and in the context of the law of attraction. But I also, sort of in my day-to-day thoughts, probably I would characterize it more as a, what I mentioned earlier about self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, that I have this idea in my head, I want to go for it, I'm putting in the work, and that's the way I'm manifesting, you know, and drawing to me the result that I want. But, you know, and I have people in my life who are certainly maybe more inclined to think of things first in the way you're describing them, and they bring these things to my attention. So it's certainly a thought that has occurred to me. You know, the I suppose I'm not gotten too deep into the spiritual meaning of the timing of my stroke or whatever. I mean, I do believe there probably is something to that, but also, you know, at the same time, I think, how is my time best put to use by dwelling upon those things, or actually doing the work of doing the exercises and the therapy and whatever? So I try to for myself come up with a healthy mix of the two. But yeah, I do believe there is something to what you're saying about the universal law.
Oh yeah. And then we have just to throw in another law there too, the law of polarity. Is that you pray for what you need in a recovery or any situation, and often you don't see the answer to the prayer because it doesn't look the way you think it should. You think that you're supposed to get something and that's what you want, but then the universe determines that this is better for you to have, and this is going to benefit you and benefit other people. And one of the biggest things that I'm hearing when you're talking about your recovery and your intention to recover is to help people who don't have a voice and to help other people. And that collective energy of doing that is, you know, in my opinion, that's what life is all about. It's people supporting one another, lifting them up, and then the universe gives you what you need every step of the way, one step at a time.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what I was saying earlier about the documentary that's being filmed about me, that wouldn't have happened if I wasn't connected to someone who was connected to someone, so on and so forth. And so I've certainly seen within my life, as I've done this recovery over the past 2 years, that there have been things where, whether you want to call it the hand of fate, or if you want to call it, well, Dante is a connector, you know, in the tipping point Malcolm Gladwell book context of describing these things. One way or another, I've been very fortunate in having the relationships I have, the people in my life that I have, to have manifested certain results. And yeah, you know, and certainly I think there's a way of looking at those things, of thinking, well, yeah, that's the universe not giving you what you want or what you need. And that's certainly a lesson I've been aware of even before my stroke, in some of my favorite fiction, reading stories that have a theme that's just like that. So I do see it in my own life too. And you know, God knows that I did not want to have a 2.5 year pause in my life due to a major stroke, but that's the hand I've been dealt. So I am trying to play it the best way I can.
Yeah, it's really impressive. The only thing that I'm going to offer you to ponder is that it's not actually a pause. It's probably not the funnest or the most pleasant, but it could be the most rich, the most meaningful, and the most important time of your life. It just isn't. I mean, I wouldn't want it to happen to me either. So I just I feel like you're gonna really help a lot of people. And I think that's amazing that you're in a position and you're inspired to do that.
Thanks. I mean, you know, I found it very interesting when you first reached out to me about doing this interview, that you called your podcast the Brain BS Podcast, because from a very early time, weeks after the stroke, I started thinking about my life as, you know, there's the old way of thinking of the calendar as being BC before Christ and AD, Anno Domini. And the way I started thinking about my life was BS, which went before stroke, and PS, which is, you know, post-stroke. So now I'm in the PS for, you know, half of my life. And, you know, PS could also stand for postscript, obviously, but I don't mean it to be a PS. I mean it to be act two, basically, of my life. But yeah, this whole BS context of thinking about my life, thinking about the teaching you're doing, the work you're doing, it was a very interesting, I don't even want to call it a coincidence, because no. In the context of this universal law, you know, we were meant to speak, you know, 50 years after we lived on the same block about this stuff. Yeah.
I call it divine intervention and divine timing. When things just, it's just very serendipitous, and it's just the way things work. If you're open to it and you're keeping your eyes, ears, and your heart open, the possibilities of connecting with other people and the ways that we can support one another are endless. So is there anything else that you didn't get to say in this episode that you would like to say?
Well, you know, it did occur to me when I listened to a few of the episodes you've got up, you know, on your feed, that you ended up, I forget the term you used, but what leapt out to me is that in the context of the book, The Artist's Way, the negative inner voice that, you know, keeps you from pursuing your dreams, or, you know, gets your confidence down or whatever, in The Artist's Way, that's called the critic, the critical voice. And, you know, it's a very insidious thing, and can do a lot of damage if you're not aware of it. And from what I heard in your podcast, you do point out the dangers of buying into that kind of negative thinking, the kind of thought ruts that they will create, you know, the pathways that aren't maybe the most productive in terms of the way your neurology is set up for your thinking. So this notion, the overall notion of what you're pursuing with this Brain BS podcast, I find very interesting as someone who's in the process of rewiring the neurology of my brain, you know, because I have to, because of the stroke. I mean, I know it can be done, but it takes work it does take, you know, belief, buy-in that this is a reality, that this can happen, but you need to pursue it. You know, you can't just sit back and passively let it happen to you. You need to be an active participant, but yes. You'll get there.
Yeah, living consciously is a practice. It's, you can learn all about it all day long, but if you don't actually practice it and apply it, you're not going to experience the benefits of it. But well, this has been great. I think it's a great interview. I think it's going to inspire a lot of people. We'll put anything that you want in the show notes. If you want people to reach out to you, you could put your email in there, or if there's anything else that you want to share. And if you don't want to share anything, you don't have to do that either.
No, I'd be happy to. I mean, I hope this reaches a lot of people. And, you know, I'm still trying to think through exactly what this post-stroke phase of my life is going to look like in terms of the advocacy work, the public speaking or whatever that I may do, you know, as a disabled person. But yeah, I probably will set up emails specific to that work. So yeah. I may share that with you before this gets posted.
Sure. And then let's do an episode, I don't know, like in a year or two from now, on the PS and how you're doing. And because I think that will also be equally as inspiring, if not more. And I'd love to see like what you end up doing. So we'll keep in touch. And yeah, for sure. If I find anyone that I think would want to have you on their podcast as well, or any events, I'll put that out to my coaching group so that you'll they'll know about you and know how to find you.
That'd be great. Well, thank you for your time. It's good talking with you, Maureen.
It was great talking to you too. Audience, I know you learned something valuable here today. I'll see you next episode. Thanks for being here and learning about Brain BS. I hope you enjoyed listening to the episode as much as I enjoyed creating it for you. If you did, please take a little time to do a quick review, give me 5 stars, and share it with everyone you know. If you're actually interested in being on the podcast yourself or have questions about it, you can find me in the Brain BS podcast community on Facebook. See you next time.